What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses. Season 12, Episode 37.
This is Writing Excuses Subplots.
15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Mary.
I'm Marianne.
And I'm Wesley.
And we're talking subplots today. So what makes something a subplot instead of the main plot of a story?
For me, it carries less emotional weight, usually. It's not the main driver. And usually the events, it's the subplot's inciting incident starts off after the main inciting incident.
That's a good definition.
I think it's important that subplots are related to the main plot in some way.
Mm. Okay.
But then I also, like, when I write my characters, I always think nobody in the world thinks about one thing all the time. We're always multitasking in some way, and the things that we multitask affect us. So that's what the subplots are for.
I would agree that a lot of the good subplots will relate to the main plot. I don't think all of them have to, but I think some of the most powerful ones, for instance, if you have a plot where two characters or a group of characters have to learn to get along before they can accomplish the goal, then the interpersonal relationship between each of them is a subplot, but it's also an essential step toward accomplishing the main plot. And in some ways, fulfilling those subplots is the thing that needs to happen. Like, we get the big cheer when the main plot is done, but if you think of something like Guardians of the Galaxy, the real emotional resonance is the subplots of the characters getting along.
And I would, as a reader, I will say that I get irritated, I think, when I run across subplots that are leading me too far away from the main plot, even if they are compelling in and of themselves.
How can you define one that is leading us too far away? Is there anything you can give us to spot it in our own work?
That's going to be tricky to...
I'll talk for a second and think about it, because this is a complaint leveled at a lot of epic fantasy.
Mm.
Robert Jordan, George R. R. Martin, the long series. Everyone loves the long series, but it seems like a catch-22 because they'll complain about them at the same time, saying too many subplots. And I just wonder if it's a matter of expectations. You expect to read about main characters and you get too much about side characters or things like this.
I think the concern is that when you have too many subplots, the subplots maybe are there for character development, and that's great. But when you have too many and you're not pushing the main plot forward, I think that's where the readers are where their complaints are coming from is, you know, you're bogging down the story way too much.
And I think it's a question of choice, right? Like, as writers, we can spin off an infinity of subplots, right? We could be, you know,
right.
I can come up with story after story after story about any given character. So then you have to make decisions about which stories you're choosing to tell right now. And presumably the ones that you are presenting to the reader are going to be in service to the larger story you are trying to tell.
Progress is an illusion.
Yeah.
And you have absolute control over that. You need to make sure that illusion doesn't break.
Yeah,
for me, it is related not just to the how it intersects with the main story, but the proportion of time that you spend on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the example that I use a lot is that the plot is kind of like your roadmap between Chicago and Chattanooga, and you can drive along and you know that, okay, I'm going to have to take a bathroom break, and this is coming at about the point that I need to take the bathroom break. There's a sign that says world's largest ball of twine. You check your map and it's 5 miles off the interstate. You're like, I have to stop anyway. This is totally worth it. That's a subplot that can enrich the trip because it makes it a little more interesting. If it is 500 miles off the interstate, that is not a subplot worth taking because it is in fact a ball of twine.
And can I, I would just add that one thing I've done to satisfy my own writerly whateverness is if I'm desperate to write that subplot that probably shouldn't be there, I will spin it off into a separate short story.
Yeah.
So, and maybe that's because I'm a short story writer, but I've done that kind of over and over again, and it lets me scratch the itch without destroying the book.
In the ebook era, that's particularly useful to do because even if it's not something that you're going to sell, fans love this stuff, putting it up and saying, hey, here's an extra little scene about this character that didn't make it in the book. That's the sort of beautiful things that we can do with our writing these days that was much harder before the internet.
I used to send notes to Ellen Kushner saying, you know, because I loved Sword's Point. It was formative to me. And she was not turning out new novels fast enough in that universe. And I'd write to her saying, do you have a scene, just a little scene between Alec and Richard? I just want to see them. What are they doing?
I mean, a subplot can be a darling. And, you know, sometimes we have the tendency to fall into the trap of, like, this is such a great little idea, and we are so clever. So we're going to make it into the book no matter what. And that's always a problem.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. How do you take one of these and weave it into the main plot then without being distracting? Any specifics writing-wise?
So I look at ways that the I feel like the subplot does not necessarily have to be related to the main plot, but that it should intersect the main plot.
Okay, that's a good way to put it.
And that those intersections are going to affect the main plot. So so for me, what I look for are the places where that intersection can be most interesting, where it can complicate things for my character. I talked with Margaret Dunlop, who talked about the difference between a complication and an obstacle. And an obstacle is something that basically stops the story, and a complication is something that changes the story. So when I'm looking for the subplots, I'm much more interested in them being a complication than I am in them being an obstacle. I'm looking for ways in which the subplot can change my character's plans.
I look at subplots as a way to support the main plot. You know, so if I need to steal this diamond from this museum, I make a detour to recruit a cat burglar to help me. And to do this, I need to go through these kind of hoops. But at the end of the day, recruiting this cat burglar is part of my main plot to...
Yeah, and see, I wouldn't call that a subplot personally.
Yeah.
I would call that part of the main plot.
I agree with Mary. You recruit the cat burglar, but then the cat burglar feels gypped by you and runs off and is then, going to tell the police. That becomes a subplot, right? The getting the cat burglar has helped you get to the main story, but then they become a complication later on.
Yeah. So let me
use... I was actually going to add that the cat burglar was an ex-girlfriend.
Oh, okay.
I forgot to add that part of it, and I was just kind of like, oh, wait a minute, I missed something.
But no, that's a really good example of the difference between something that is a part of the main plot and part of the subplot. The subplot is your character's relationship with ex-girlfriend. That's the subplot. And the intersection is the way that affects the recruiting of the cat burglar. So, and this is, I think, what happens to a lot of writers when they are looking for a subplot, is they pick something that is too closely aligned to their main driver, or they pick something that is too far away. One thing that I think about when I'm using the Mace quotient, which is milieu, answers, characters, and events, is that when I'm looking for a subplot, I try to look for a subplot that isn't in the same category as the main plot, because then what I have is two drivers that are running parallel and they don't tend to intersect. So what happens is, like, when you jump over to the other subplot, you know, like, if plot A is we need to get out of this jail, and plot B is across town someone is working on a building, and those two things have nothing to do with each other, every time we go over to the building, we're like, I don't care about the building. Do not care about the building. It feels like a distraction. Whereas if the subplot had been, you know, we need to get out of this jail, and the subplot is, and we need to figure out who framed us.
Right.
If it's an answer thing, those two things can run in, can intersect
so
in interesting
promises
ways.
Promises comes into this again, doesn't it? Yeah. I found that weaving in a subplot works best when the characters got passion. You know, it's this thing that you come back to, character focus. And I guess it's about promises also. But this idea that we've known all along this character is really passionate about, you know, collecting these rocks. And even though it's going to be distraction, sometimes we're like, you know, we're on board with this because we love this character. We love what they are passionate about. And if we can follow their passion, then we get fulfilled. But the point, the important part is, that I can't remember who said this in the podcast here, but we need it to, we need to affect things.
Yeah.
We need the fact that that character has gotten that rock. I'm picking something completely ridiculous. Has gotten that rock, improves their, you know, their outlook on life. They're like, you know, I have my lucky rock now. I have the confidence to accomplish what I need to. And it doesn't always have to be some great character moment like that, but I really like it when it ties in even a little bit.
Yeah, well, and with something like that,
I
you know,
it has to tie in a little bit, though, because if not, then if you can remove the entire subplot and it doesn't affect the story whatsoever,
it shouldn't be there.
Then it shouldn't be there.
I think when we're talking about short fiction, absolutely true. Yeah. When we're talking about novel, if it's there to illuminate the character, you can argue that that is. That is part of the
thing. If you can illuminate the character in the world, like I have in the Stormlight Archive, I have short stories in between sections of books that only very slightly relate. They're mostly, hey, this other part of the world exists. Keep that in mind. They don't relate to the main plot. And I'm writing 1,000-page books so I can get away with
but
that.
But I would say I haven't actually read this book. But to me, that sounds like a really interesting experimental form, what you're doing. And I think that's great. It is not what most long novels look like.
It is not. Yeah. That is true. Mary, we interrupted you.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, that was so mean of us. Should I do it again and do the book of the week, or do you got—
Do the book of the week, okay. Because I can't remember what it was I was going to say.
Marianne, you were going to pitch a collection of yours.
Well, it's an anthology, actually.
Oh, that you edited.
That I edited. So this is Survivor. It's coming out from Lethe Press. This book emerged because a friend and I, J.J. Pionke, and I were talking about trauma and about how people recover from trauma, and we were doing this— In a variety of contexts, we were talking about mental illness and PTSD. We were talking about domestic violence, my own research into the war in Sri Lanka, war stories, military experiences, and we realized that there was this sort of common thread that we were both really interested in. JJ's interested in bullying and the effects of that. So we put out this call for stories of science fiction, fantasy stories about trauma and survival. And we're interested in sort of the path that these characters took to a place where they could not just survive, but thrive. And it's not a self-help book, and it's not, they're not even all happy ending stories. But we wanted to kind of present these ways of looking at it. And I think it ended up being a really interesting collection. It's a mix of military stories, domestic stories, just general adventure stories. And I think there's going to be a lot of meat there for people to enjoy. I'm excited about it. I'm super excited.
Awesome. Well, you guys should look at that. It's called Survivor. All right, Mary.
I remembered. Okay, so this is one of the advantages to subplots, and it's related to the example of the rock collector, that when you get farther down the story, you can pull solutions to different problems from any of the subplots that are in play, as opposed to only having one subplot plot that you can pull solutions from. So, for instance, let's say we've got this rock collector, but the main plot is zombie apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
And so the rock collector is constantly, you know, he's collected this rock. It makes him feel safer. It has no practical function. People are giving him grief because he's like, you could be carrying supplies and you're carrying a rock. And he's like, I know, but look, it's this amazing thing. If one of the other subplots is there's a baseball player who's with the group, and he feels completely useless because he's a professional baseball player and has no survivable skills, zombie comes, he takes the guy's favorite rock and throws it at the zombie. And that, then, combining your solution from those two different mm-hmm. subplots, that's the kind of intersection that can make a story spark and more interesting.
Can I ask, that doesn't feel too convenient? I worry about that. This is one of those things that I'm always fretting about.
Convenience is something that we do worry about. I think you could make that one work by, you know, give me your stupid rock. No, I'm not going to give you my – I mean, you can play it for laughs.
I mean, it feels like that's a subplot that supports the main plot, mm-hmm. and that totally works for me. There's often when I see a subplot that just kind of ends without – I mean, when I read a subplot, I'm thinking this will be important down the line because I don't know why else it's here. If it doesn't – if I get no payoff from that by the end of the book or by the end of the series, then I'm going to be like, why was it even there?
Well, let me pitch you a form, not a rock, a form of storytelling that is super common where the subplot doesn't affect. And that's the Hollywood A plot, B plot method, which is a lot of sitcoms use this, a lot of dramas use this. There's a main plot with a main cast of characters, and then there is a secondary cast who hijinks ensue. Mm-hmm. And by the time the main characters get back, all the hijinks have been unensued. And everything's back to normal. This happened, the television show Chuck did this. There was the A plot, we're super spies, B plot, all the goofy people who work at the superstore are doing stuff. Most dramas do this.
But that actually does serve a function.
It totally does.
Not just in terms of pacing, but mm-hmm. in terms of, because that is, television series are long-form narratives.
Yes.
And it serves the function of keeping characters active in the viewer's minds. So it is not without function.
But those characters are never involved in the spy plot.
But they're usually, I feel like when I watch these shows, I mean, I watch Grey's Anatomy, for example, mm-hmm. and they have that kind of structure, but they're usually thematically related for any given episode.
Yeah, they will do that. That's true.
So, I mean, there's a connection. It's not that the action in one sequence is affecting the action in the other. It's not. But the writers are choosing to tell these two stories at the same time because they're emotionally resonant with each other.
Yeah, I actually feel like in those cases, that's less – I mean, I know that A plot, B plot, that technically it is a subplot, but I almost feel more like structurally what you're looking at is two unrelated interwoven stories.
Parallel plots.
Mm-hmm. Parallel
okay,
plots.
So I used to watch Grey's Anatomy. But, but I mean, it's no, Grey's Anatomy always have like three, four plots of these characters. And there's always a theme in mm-hmm. every episode, but I never feel like there's like one main plot and a couple minor plots. It's
right.
It's two, three plots.
It's an ensemble.
Kind of ensemble
okay.
cast
yeah,
there's
going.
There's yeah. a novel that does this beautifully. It's called My Name is Red, and I've forgotten the author's name. And it's fantastic, but it's a whole bunch of miniature stories that are all connected and also all totally separate.
There's also the great great Christmas movie that people love to hate. I'm blanking on the title. It's got like 12 intersecting romance stories of Christmas.
Oh, I hate that movie.
I know.
My niece loves it, and I can't remember the name
of it. Let's move on from this, though, because I'm convinced that's just two
Love
parallel
Actually.
Stories.
Love Actually. That's
but
right.
What about side characters? Does every side character in a story, let's say you're writing a novel, do they each need a subplot of their own to make them work?
I feel like it depends on we're talking secondary characters, not tertiary. And I feel like secondary characters are most interesting when they have their own goals. And those goals do not necessarily have to affect the main plot. They don't I sometimes will have characters who have goals and they achieve them off stage, and we just know that these side plots happen off stage. And I like reading books like that. I feel like it makes the characters more complete and it gives a sense of a larger world. Do I think it's necessary? No. I've seen plenty of stories that don't do that and that are perfectly fine. But as a reader, I find that a more fulfilling experience.
Yeah, I don't want spear carriers, right? I want to have a sense that these people have their own missions. I mean, you think of something like The Lord of the Rings. Merry and Pippin, at the beginning, are just kind of generic additional hobbits, right? But by the time you get to the end, they have developed their own desires, have followed them, which have turned out to be completely critical to the overall arc.
I think it helps. I don't think it's necessary. I think if you can describe a spear carrier that is always the main character, but you flesh him out so that he has his own personality, his own thoughts, his own history, you don't need to send him off on his own subplot as long as you've really spent time building him up, him or her up.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get some homework.
Okay. So your homework for the week is, let's say that four major things will drive a story. They are environment, characters, disruption of the status quo, and questions. Take a piece, look at your main plot, and decide which of these four things it is. Then ask which of the remaining three things can go wrong, and make one of them your subplot.
All right, this has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write. So listeners, I used the word gypped in this podcast, and it's a word I've been trying to eliminate from my vocabulary. And we thought rather than just cutting it out, I would put this little thing on here. This is one of those words that wiggles its way into your dialogue, which you don't realize is deeply offensive to people. And so I want to apologize to the Roma people who might be listening. I'm trying to get rid of it. And if those who don't know, it actually means gypsy, ripping off, because gypsies were seen as people who would rip you off. And it is an offensive racial stereotype. So I apologize for using that. And I thank you guys for continuing to listen, even through the mistakes that we occasionally make.
Writing Excuses is a Dragonsteel production, jointly hosted by Brandon Sanderson, Dan Wells, Mary Robinette Kowal, and Howard Taylor. This episode was mastered by Alex Jackson.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.